Hi, you're listening to the My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sandbach from Australia. Well, as the IPL started, I've been really amazed that the two highest scorers so far have been really technical and orthodox players. Like, you'd expect people like Mascarenhas or Flintoff or some of the big hitters like Dhoni to be the top scorers and be effective in games like these, but it's been players like Dravid and Tendulkar. Have you been watching much of the IPL, David?
No, unfortunately, I haven't. The IPL is on a pay-per-view channel over here. It's not pay-per-view. It's you pay a monthly fee. It's I think it's £11 a month. And yeah. So I thought to myself, well, you know, that's quite a lot for just the IPL. And it's a sports channel, and they mainly concentrate on the Premier League football.
Yeah.
So. And I'm not particularly interested in watching Premier League football matches, so it'd be a bit of a waste of money for me to buy it for the IPL, I think. So no, I'm sticking to my Sky Sports and watching the domestic cricket and waiting for the Test matches to start.
Fair enough.
I agree with you about technique. I think that's one of the trends I've noticed in the domestic 2020 over here in the UK is the technically better batsmen are the ones that tend to score more runs.
Yeah.
The good batsmen in 2020 are the good batsmen. Although you get players who can pull it off, who can give it a hit. They're a bit more hit and miss than the players with the top averages and the top. Average runs per innings. You know, so I completely agree with you on that, Kev. But also, I've been playing cricket myself. But finally, the season has started over here.
Yeah, how'd you go?
Dark winter. Yeah, not too bad. It was a pre-season friendly, so we weren't particularly worried about the result, which is good because we lost. We were trying to win, of course, but they proved to be a much stronger side. They play two divisions above us. They play in the first division of our league, and we're in the third division. So we were always going to be up against it, and so it proved. We scored 130 something. I think it was 133 in the end, off our 40 overs, which wasn't bad. It was a slow wicket. It was a slow outfield. It was wet. It was green. It was a typical April club wicket over here in the UK. So although it wasn't difficult to bat on, it was hard enough that decent bowling could have you in trouble.
Yeah.
So, I had a little bat at the end. That was quite good fun. I had basically had a swing because I was only in for the last couple of overs. And I pretty much had a swing at everything. And,
That's always fun.
Exactly. I managed to connect with one, which I hit for six.
Yeah.
Shortest boundary. I was on the shortest boundary. So it wasn't it wasn't the biggest of sixes. It's probably only about a 45-yard boundary, but it went over the line. That's all that counts. But I didn't connect with anything else, so I ended up on six, not out. And then we bowled, and they knocked them off relatively easily. I mean, we made it quite difficult for them. We took a few wickets, not enough to get them in trouble. I think we took three or four in the end, and They batted quite slowly, but they knocked him off in plenty of time. I think they knocked him off with about five or six overs to spare. So, you know, we gave them enough of a game for it to be worthwhile for everyone. And all our bowlers had a run out, and we used our occasional bowlers as well. It was good fun, and it was good weather, and it was great to play, great to be on the pitch and playing cricket after what seemed like a very long winter.
Yeah, and what did you notice of the skill level between both of your divisions? Were they similar, or was there a bit of a difference?
I wouldn't say there's anything obviously different. You know, there was no one there who was miles and miles ahead of our players. You know, they were typical sort of club level players, quite good. You know, they can give it a hit, but you know, there was some. You could see the technical errors in pretty much everybody. So, you know, they were. I think it was just that they were, you know, they were just slightly better players. I mean, not enough to say, gosh, you know, they thrashed us, but they were just that much better.
Yeah.
You know, their bowlers were that little bit more accurate, and their batsmen just hit the ball that little bit harder, you know, and a little bit more often, and it was just enough to make the difference. We were quite pleased with the performance because we weren't putting out a full strength side. They put out a nearly full strength side, so you know we were quite pleased. I mean, obviously, you'd never want to lose a game, but we put in a good we put in a good showing, which is all you can ask for. And also, we were experimenting a bit. You know, we used quite a lot of bowlers, and I experimented a little bit as well because, as you know, I keep wicket. So I thought to myself this year, let's try a couple of new things in the friendlies and see how they get on. I've never worn a helmet before playing, and I decided to wear a helmet to stand up to the medium pacers to see how that was. So you know, anyone who's under 18 who's listening will be surprised to learn that not all keepers who are standing up to the stumps wear a helmet. But I, you know, I'm old enough to come from a time when you didn't do that, so it just wasn't the done thing. So, you know, I've never been used to it. So that was quite an interesting experiment. It was quite good. Takes a bit of getting used to, looking through a grill and all the rest of it. But, you know, it wasn't a disaster. And I kept reasonably well, considering it's the first game of the season. Another thing was I bought a new pair of sunglasses in the winter. Not Oakleys, those are the ones I had my eye on, but, you know, the cost of the Oakleys is a little bit too much to justify, you know, considering in this country you probably only get to wear sunglasses, well, at most, you know, a third of the time, I'd say. So you can't really justify the cost when you're only wearing sunglasses, say, you know, maximum 10 times in a season. So I bought the best of the budget ones, which are called Sunwise. I've been told that they're the best. Yep. So I bought some Sunwise radars. Not a rip off of the Oakley radars at all, I'm sure.
Do they serve the purpose?
They were brilliant. Yeah, they come with, they're quite good because they're pretty cheap, and they come with three different lenses. So they're interchangeable lenses, and they come with lenses for overcast conditions, lenses for sunny conditions.
Yeah.
And lenses for extreme sunny conditions. I won't be using those. I can be pretty sure of. But the sunny ones were brilliant because it was a lovely day. You know, the sun was out all day. It was warm for the time of year, probably about 15 or 16 degrees, which is quite warm for the time of year here. And yeah, that was excellent. I wore them while we were batting. We were batting first, and I just sort of wore them while we were sort of messing around and walking around the boundary and all the rest of it, waiting to bat, and that seemed okay. So I wore them to keep wicket in, and while the sun was out, they were perfect. I took them off towards the end when the sun went behind a cloud, because they weren't. It didn't feel right, you know. Keep wearing them when it was overcast. So I took them off then, but the glare, just purely for the reduction in the glare, you know, that was the excellent part of it. So you kind of get used to squinting and you forget that you're squinting, but when you got the sunglasses on, of course, you don't squint at all. And I was slightly worried in that because they're not Oakleys. Oakley's big claim, or one of Oakley's big claims, is that they just reduce the glare, so they don't alter the image at all. They don't give you altered perception in the slightest. They just cut out the glare. Whereas cheaper sunglasses, if you look through them, they slightly distort the image, only slightly, so you can't really tell, but it might be enough to put you off. You know, if the ball's coming towards you, you know, at top speed, then...
Yeah, that's right. Because it loses focus.
Yeah, because it's a slightly distorted image. Not distorted as in blurry, but distorted as in the ball's in a slightly different place from where it looks like through the sunglasses.
Yeah.
But that didn't seem to have any effect on me at all. All I thought was, wow, this is brilliant. I'm going to wear these all the time, because you just don't get any glare. Whereas when, even, even on a April day, you get some glare off the pitch when you're keeping wicket. So it was good.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, and the last thing which was quite interesting I discovered when I was keeping was, as the game went on, I mean, this may be because it's early season and I'm not 100% cricket fit yet, so I found myself losing concentration a little bit towards the end of the match. I mean, we were at that point, we were on our way to losing anyway. You know, we'd sort of given up all hope of winning the match by that point because they were cruising to victory.
Yeah.
So it could have been to do with that. It also could have been because, you know, I hadn't kept wicket for that amount of time. Even 30 overs is quite a long time when you haven't done it for 6 months. But I found myself losing concentration a bit. And I thought maybe the reason for that, because we had our lesser bowlers on at the time, because all our main bowlers had turned their arm over. So the lesser bowlers were just sort of, we were just going through the motions a little bit. But I found myself sort of thinking, well, the ball's not really going to come to me now because these batsmen are good batsmen. They've got their eye in. The bowlers are, you know, pretty average bowlers. I wouldn't say they're bad bowlers. They're just second string or third string club bowlers. So you can imagine, you know, they're not particularly great. So, you know, I wasn't really, I sort of lost that edge, I thought, which is an interesting, you know, psychological point. And I couldn't really find a way of pulling myself out of it either. I just think, oh, the ball's not going to come to me. Of course, as soon as you start thinking that, the ball starts coming to you. So, you know, I missed a stumping down the leg side. So that was a bit of a pain. And I'm pretty sure it's just because I wasn't expecting the ball. You know, I moved across, got my hands there, and just didn't quite. It's just a small thing, but didn't quite get there. You know, and I also dropped a catch. Yeah. It was a hard one. I was standing up, and it was an inside edge, so they're always difficult. But again, it's one of those I'd probably bank myself to catch more often than not. And just for some reason, I didn't have that laser focus. So that's an interesting one. You know, if you're listening and you keep wicket, I just wonder if anyone else experiences that kind of almost like slightly losing interest in the game, whether it's down to fitness or whether it's down to whatever, and you have a lapse in concentration and it causes a mistake. I'm sure it happens to batsmen as well. Yeah. You know, they relax too much. And I'm sure it happens to fielders who just, you know, the ball's never coming to them, so they think it's never going to come to them, and then it does, and you're in trouble then. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, it's happened to me so many times. And it's only when you just zone out that a catch comes to you, and you feel really dirty about it.
Do you find yourself thinking, I'm losing concentration here, or do you only realise it after you've dropped the catch, or after you've done the misfield, or whatever it is?
Yeah, for me, it's usually after I've dropped it. Cause I don't notice it because I usually lose concentration when I'm at the worst fielding position. So like third man or fine leg or somewhere you don't often expect a catch. That's when I usually drop them.
Your mind wanders a little bit and that's it.
Yeah, especially when you're at fine leg or third man, and because you have to bowl as well. So I'd be thinking about my next over or whatever. All of a sudden a slide one comes to you.
Yeah, and you're on your heels and you suddenly think, oh, well, hang on a minute, I better catch this.
Yeah.
Too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's 10 times worse when you're keeping wicket, of course, because ball's much more likely to come to you. So.
Yeah. And they always say keepers are noticed more once they drop a catch.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So. So it wasn't the best keeping performance from me, it was just a run out more than anything. I'm not going to lose much sleep over it. The league doesn't start until May, so we've got a bit of time to get some extra practice in.
Yeah, sure, it'll get better.
Absolutely. Now, I popped in a phone call area this week for our five questions section. So without further ado, let's have a listen. And I'm joined today by Mark Atkinson, who's a former first-class wicketkeeper batsman who runs Elite Cricket, a company in Australia, in Sydney, Australia, and you can find them at elitecricket.com.au. So the first question is, who is Mark Atkinson?
Well, a good place to start. I suppose my involvement, I've had a lifetime involvement in cricket, starting as a player, and I've been involved as a player at all the different levels of the game for over 30 years. That includes the junior club cricket. I played 10 years of first class cricket with Tasmania in the Sheffield Shield competition in Australia. As part of that journey, I managed to attain a whole lot of coaching accreditations, including a level 3 over here, a phys ed degree, and a few other things, which has really positioned me to have the involvement that I do with elite cricket here in Sydney.
What's the best piece of cricketing advice you've been given?
That's a good question. Look, I think the best piece of advice I ever got came from my mother, who told me to play my natural game. And I think it's a very easy thing to forget, especially for, well, not so much young players, but, you know, young players would do well to remember it. The need to do what you do well, and you know, it's, I suppose it can be an easy thing to do to forget, what got you, what has brought you success, and to go away from that. So I think it's play your natural game.
So props to your mum for that one.
That's it, yeah.
Are there any trends in current coaching that you disagree with?
It seems to me, and I'm assuming, but sometimes in the international game, I think the analyst or someone tends to get an idea that, something that they see on the video that looks good on the video, and that strategy is pursued often at times at the expense of common sense. And a recent example was Philip Hughes in the South Africa, Australia series in South Africa, and I think they perceived to have some sort of weakness on his cut shot, and they ended up bowling to one of his strengths rather than, you know, good old-fashioned common sense around attacking the top of off stump. So, I just think sometimes there's a bit I don't know if it's coaching or it's the thought processes of the players, but sometimes planning seems to, lack the flexibility that good cricket in the situation requires.
Let's talk a little bit more about you now. Now, one thing that I've found out over the years, you can tell a lot about a person by what's in their fridge. So what's in your fridge at the moment?
Well, there's not much. There's some peaches,
yeah.
Some pears in cranberry juice. I just had a look at it. I was very fresh in my mind. A loaf of bread and some mince that I'm going to cook tonight and some vegetables. But I always like to have mangoes in my fridge when they're in season because that would have to be my favourite, mangoes.
And the last one, I'm a wicketkeeper myself, so I know this is true. Why are all wicketkeepers mad?
Why are they mad? Oh, I think you have to be. To do it, it's probably the, you know, it's the, wicketkeeper. It's the hardest job in cricket because there's absolutely no downtime and there's nowhere to hide. So I think you have to be, you have to be mad. But those who do it and enjoy it and do it well would agree that it's the best role you can have in cricket because you're always in the game. But why are they mad? Maybe we're born mad, but I'd have to agree.
Mark Atkinson, those are your 5 questions. Thank you very much. And if you're interested in getting coaching from Mark and you're in the Sydney area, you can head over to elitecricket.com.au. Thanks, Mark.
All right, let's get into the question section.
Okay.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question is from a keeper. His name's Dan. And he says, I've always kept wicket part-time, but this season I'll be doing it at full-time level, at a Premier League level, and this has prompted me to take it a bit more seriously. So I was wondering if you could send me some wicket-keeping drills and some agility drills. I'm currently working with my local minor county's wicket-keeper. My boss is one of the best wicket-keepers around to have not played professionally. But the more advice and drills I can get, the better. David, I don't know if you've read Adam Gilchrist's book, True Colours, yet?
No, I haven't. No. I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think I could get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a read of it recently, and one drill that stood out for me was, he said Ian Healy recommended it to him, and it was the golf ball on the wall drill. And he said it didn't particularly train his hand-eye coordination, but it trained his technique in keeping. Because he said all my hand-eye coordination was already trained, but my technique wasn't. So that really helped him groove his technique. Do you have similar drills to that?
Yeah. The key really, there was two things really. There's the technical side, as you say, and the general sort of hand-eye coordination. Those two things go quite well together anyway. And there's the there's the actual practice itself. So, in terms of the technical side, yeah, golf ball's brilliant because it's smaller, of course. So, you know, if you can, you're just throwing a golf ball against the wall is a really good practice that you can do on your own. If you're doing training, if you're training with someone, which is always hard for keepers, because keepers, you know, you tend to only get one keeper.
Yeah,
exactly. But you can't do keeping practice by yourself very easily. I mean, you know, if you've got a wall, you can do some stuff, but that's about it. So you have to rope somebody in to give you a hand for a few minutes. But if you can get rope someone in and you've got a tennis ball and a tennis racket, then you can get someone to hit tennis balls to you relatively hard from relatively close. And that's quite good because that teaches you to catch with soft hands. Standing close improves your reactions to getting to the ball, so your hand-eye coordination to getting to the ball. And it also helps you work on the technical side, you know, getting your head over the ball and getting your feet in the right position and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that. If you've got a surface that you can hit the tennis ball off as well, that's quite good. If the floor's hard enough, it can be hard sometimes if you're trying to do this on an outfield or something. If you can hit it onto the floor and you can do practice standing up as well with a tennis racket and a tennis ball. Then once you've done that for a few, that's what I always like to do, a few minutes of that. And then if I can, it can be a bit difficult, but if you can try do some keeping to some actual bowling as well. So if you're in the net, that can be difficult because often there's not enough room for the keeper in the net at all. So sometimes you have to try and arrange a practice game just so you can get some kind of practice in there. But that can be done. You know, you can do middle practice. You can do middle practice, and that's good practice for the bowlers and the batsmen as well. But I'm not a big fan of keeping in the nets anyway, even if there is room, because generally you're sort of going up and down a lot. You know, you're keeping to different types of bowlers every time. You've got a seamer, then a spinner. You know, then you've got the bloke who's a batsman who doesn't really bowl, and he fires one down the leg side, and then, you know, suddenly then it's a, you know, slightly quicker seamer, and then it's a loopy spinner, and then it's a slightly, you know, then it's your team's fastest bowler, and, you know, it's, you're all over the place. So if you are doing practice with a batsman and a bowler, I would say you get the bowlers to bowl in overs, in six ball overs, because that's a lot easier. You get used to the pace of the ball, because I know as a keeper, sometimes you need a few balls just to get a feel for the pace of how hard it's coming into your gloves and how quickly it's coming off the pitch and all the rest of it.
Yeah, just curious, David, do keepers ever train with bowling machines?
I've not seen it or not done it myself, but I don't see any reason why you couldn't. You could set up the bowling machine. Yeah, you could set up the bowling machine quite easily to help with technique, but it would be you'd want to do it for technique rather than for practicing, replacing sort of net type keeping. But there's no reason why you couldn't, especially if you've got a batsman who's willing to sort of deliberately play and miss at balls as well to help you get the technique of going down the leg side, because that's quite a difficult one. So you absolutely could. You could get throwdowns as well. That's always a good one, and you can use like a cricket bag stood up as a batsman, so you can find someone to give you throwdowns, then you can put a bag up as a batsman instead of having a batsman, and that replicates having a batsman. So there's lots of things you can do, and just do as much practice as you can, because you cannot practice enough keeping wicket, especially like going down the leg side. Because you're blinded, there's always going to be more work you can do, and there's always going to be a few that you miss that you think, if only I practiced a bit harder, I would have got to that. So, yeah, so yep. Practice as much as you can in as many different ways as you can. And, you know, if you've got a coach, if you've got a coach, then speak to them and get them to force someone to help you out for 10 minutes or quarter of an hour during the practice sessions. Grab someone who isn't a bowler. Those are the best people. Grab someone who isn't a bowler. They've had their bat in the net and they don't particularly want to bowl because they're not very good. But they feel like they should do something because they've had their bat. They grab them and go, "Oh, give us a hand with," and they'll be relieved to help you out. So that's the secret of that.
Alex, our next question is from Lal Yadav from Mumbai, and he seems to have a problem in his lower abdomen area after he bowls 8 overs straight. And he says that the next day when he goes for a run, or he does anything strenuous, that his lower abdomen hurts, and he asks for your help, David. Could this be because he's not stretching properly, or would it be a more serious problem?
When it comes to injuries and pain, it's not my area. I don't really know very much about that. So I'll defer him to someone who knows a bit more about it. A physio-type person would be much better to speak to regarding that.
Yeah.
Generally, if you get pain, there's a difference between soreness and pain. So if he's feeling soreness, then that's not unusual. So I wouldn't worry too much about it if you just saw, if you bowl a reasonably long spell. I mean, 8 overs isn't massively long, but if you bowl a reasonably long spell and then the next day you're a bit sore, then that's not unusual.
Yep.
But if you're feeling pain the next day, then there's something not, you know, pain is a warning from your body. So I would advise that person to go and see a physio regarding that, because you don't want to mess around with pain, really.
Yeah, but if he had to sort of strengthen his abdomen, as he asks, David, what sort of exercises would you recommend?
The second part of the question was what can I do to strengthen?
Yeah, he asks what exercises, strengthen his core and lower abdomen.
Yeah, I mean, in his case, I would say don't do any exercises, go and see a physio. But if we're talking generally speaking about strengthening your lower abdomen, the first thing you have to know is, you know, basic anatomy of the body means there isn't really such a thing as lower abs. You know, that's a thing a lot of people talk about training is lower abs. There isn't really such a thing as that. There's a muscle at the front of your stomach, which is the one that is the six pack, called the rectus abdominis.
Yeah.
That's the one you can see. Yep. If you've got, you know, if you do lots of sit-ups and you've got low body fat, then that's the six pack.
Yeah.
That's just one muscle that stretches from, you know, all the way down from the bottom of your chest down your stomach. So that, you know, there's no such thing as a lower ab in that way, but there is oblique muscles, internal and external obliques, and they feel like when you do lower ab exercises like leg raises, for example, you can feel them working and you can feel them being sore the next day. So it feels like you've got lower abs even though you haven't. In terms of training those muscles up, I mean, there's even more muscles than that in the core area. But in terms of training those sort of muscles, the first question you want to ask yourself is, what do those muscles do while you're playing cricket? And then can I train them to do that more efficiently? And what they do is they stabilize the central part of your body, most importantly, your lower back. They stabilize that while your limbs are moving quickly. So while you're running or bowling or batting or whatever it is, they stabilize your muscles in that way. And it's mostly a subconscious thing. You can't control how those muscles fire. They just fire or they don't fire.
Yeah.
So in terms of training, you want to do training that teaches your subconscious mind to improve the way that those muscles fire, rather than trying to consciously train them. Like when I say consciously train them, I'm talking about, say, doing a sit-up or a crunch. That's a conscious movement where you're using your rectus abdominis muscle to lift your upper body, your shoulders and your head off the floor from a lying position. So that's a conscious muscle contraction. You're deliberately doing that to increase the strength of that muscle. that doesn't have much of a direct effect.
So you recommend playing more cricket, or like doing more cricket specific things to build your and strengthen your core, rather than doing specific exercises like sit-ups, etc.?
Well, yes and no. There's definitely, I mean, obviously you want to play cricket because that is the most cricket specific thing you can do to train your core. But what you want to be careful of is that if you're doing it wrong while you're doing your fielding drills, or you're doing it wrong while you're batting, or doing it wrong while you're bowling, then it's not really improving the core. All you're doing is reinforcing something which has got a bad pattern in the first place. So there's kind of an in between where you're not directly training those muscles, you're not directly playing the sport. There's an in between bit where you can indirectly teach those muscles to fire correctly. And that's really just learning how to keep your back in that S shape. You know, that classical picture of a spine, which is in a kind of an S shape. So if you learn to keep that S shape in your spine while you're doing exercises, then you're going to be doing it while you're playing cricket as well. So things like, you know, throwing a medicine ball, doing squats with a light weight, you know, trying to get deep into the squat. Things where basically you're moving your limbs, but you're keeping your stomach muscles braced while you're doing it. And the more you can do of those kind of exercises, the better you will become at subconsciously controlling your lower back position as you're playing cricket.
Our next question is from Declan, and he says, I'm an under-17s player who bowls tournament, and I'm a decent right-hand batsman. I have training once or twice a week, and I would like to train more. Unfortunately, the local nets are used every other day of the week for other age groups and seniors. I have some decent drills to do in my backyard for bowling and batting, but the only problem is it's a small backyard. Because of size, the only drill I can do is have a hit with the ball on a string, which gets rather monotonous. Any help here would be great. Thanks. Any childhood exercises or drills you had when you were young, David, or still do?
We were lucky enough that me and my brother, we had a big enough garden that we could actually, have a game of cricket. I mean, a few windows got broken and all the rest of it, and we had to have special rules. As all backyard games have to have, but we had enough room to play cricket. So, and my brother was always on hand to bowl to me, and I was always on hand to bowl to him. So, in terms of that, no, we never had that problem. It is a problem in that if you're on your own and you've only got a small space, what can you do? Well, the true answer is there's not much you can do, because cricket, at its essence, is a game played by someone bowling and someone batting. You know, that really is the minimum requirement to have it as realistic as you can have it. There are certain things you can do. The first thing I would say is just, grab whoever you can grab to help you and get to the local park, because there'll be plenty of space there. And you can give the ball a bit of a, you don't even need proper equipment, just a tennis ball and, a plastic bat or whatever, and just have a bit of a mess around. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be more realistic than anything you can do in a small backyard. That said, if you absolutely have to do something on your own, then mirror batting, which I've talked about before, just standing in the mirror and playing your shots and seeing what looks right, is much better than you would imagine it should be, because it teaches you to get into the right position. Okay, you're doing it without a ball, so it's an unrealistic situation, but you're more likely to remember how to do it with a ball if you practice standing in the mirror all the time. Also, we've talked about using a golf ball for wicket keeping. You can use a golf ball for fielding and a golf ball for playing cricket as well, because it's the classic Don Bradman thing, isn't it? The golf ball and the stump. You can customize that a bit. You can use a golf ball and a plastic bat, or you can use a tennis ball and a cricket bat, or a tennis ball and a stump. However you want to do it, just try hitting the ball up against the wall as many times as you can, see how many you can do, turn it into a game, turn it into a competition.
Yeah.
See if you can beat yourself. You know, throwing the ball against the wall and catching it. Again, that teaches good technique. You know, you have to catch a tennis ball with soft hands, otherwise it bounces out.
Yeah.
So it makes catching a cricket ball a lot harder. So in terms of fielding and catching, that's a good practice you can do.
Yeah.
So there are a few things you can do. It's mostly hand-eye coordination stuff. You know, throw the ball against the wall and catch it with your left hand only, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Have you done anything like that, Kev?
Yeah, I have a big sort of games room at the back of my house, which is absolutely empty. It's just got a couple of couches. And what I still do, tuck a sort of a rubber ball, which comes really close to the wall, and I have my bat in my front arm, so my forearm, in my left arm, and I tuck the ball at the wall and play with just left arm, to sort of make the left arm my dominant arm, because I tend to have a lot of bottom hand action while batting, which gets the ball into the air more than I like to. So, yeah, that's one of the techniques I use.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, one hand.
Yeah. You ever use a cricket ball on the string? Because I know that's a popular drill for young kids, but it's sort of getting phased out at the moment.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's the next step up from the mirror, basically, because then, you know, the mirror is without a ball. The next thing is there's a stationary ball there, and it's on a string, so you hit it and it comes back to you, rather than, you say, you put it on a batting tee, one of those little tees, and you hit it. You've got to go and get it then, haven't you? So, but with the string, you don't have to go and get it. So it's the next thing up. But I've forgotten the name of it, but there's a game, you've probably got it in Australia too, where you've got there's a tennis ball on a bit of string on a pole, and you have a two-player game. You have these plastic rackets, and you have to hit the ball with the plastic racket.
I remember it, but I can't remember the name.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's on the ball's on a spiral type thing. So one player has to try and get it to the top, and the other player has to try and get it to the bottom.
Yeah.
So you're whacking the ball back and forth between. That's probably slightly better, because you've got a moving ball there and it's helping with your hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
So that might be slightly better than those cricket ball ones. But, you know, it's all good. You know, a ball on a string, a ball in a sock, you know, they're basic, very, very basic things. If you want to groove shots, you can groove technique with them. But at some point, if you want to play cricket to a decent standard, at some point, you're going to have to play against someone who's bowling the ball to you in some form or another. They could be throwing it, they could be using a bowling machine, they could be bowling whatever. You know, that has to happen at some point.
Yeah.
Because that's the essence of the game. And there's no really getting around that. But, I mean, if anyone's listening and they've got any games that they play in their back garden or their backyard, that they enjoy, you know, it's a bit of fun more than anything, because there's not much more you can do than have a bit of fun. But it's a bit of fun, it's a bit of a challenge. You can do it on your own with a tennis ball, your minimal equipment. If there's any sort of those games that you play, then do email in mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Email us in with your games and let us know if there's any games that we can pass on to everybody else that you can play and maybe... improve your cricket at the same time.
Our next question is from Heinze, and he or she asks, "Hi, I'm a left-handed batsman who usually bats around 2 or 3, which means I'm out there when the openers are on, and I'm having trouble picking up the line and length of the ball early. I know I'm watching the ball, but I still feel like I'm hurried into my shots. Any advice or tips?" David, when you go out to bat, do you pick up the line and length from the first ball, or does it take you a while to start picking up the line and length? Because I know it takes me about 2 overs to start reading it out of the bowler's hands.
Well, judging from the way I played in the last game, then it takes a little bit more than 2 overs. I was closing my eyes and swinging a bit, to be honest. But it takes everyone. No one. There's no one in the world. I bet even if you ask the top players in the world today, even Ricky Ponting, Kevin Peterson, there's no one who picks it up first time. I'd be amazed if anyone could do that. because conditions change, conditions vary so much that, you know, it just takes that, especially if you haven't done anything. You know, if you've been sitting in the pavilion, even if it's for only for an over, you've been sitting around in the pavilion, you do have to take your time to get accustomed to that. So yeah, that's the first thing. You know, don't think you can start whacking it from ball one, because you can't. You know, no one can. I'm sure even the big hitters, although it didn't look like it sometimes, or doesn't look like it sometimes, you know, I'm sure even they probably chance their arm a bit early on until they get their iron a little bit more. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say is that make sure that all the basics are in place. Get your eyes tested. I know that sounds a bit, you know, that sounds a bit strange, but some people need contact lenses or glasses. They don't realise it because they're only slightly short-sighted. So, you know, get that checked. Make sure your vision's good. Colour blindness can cause a problem sometimes as well. So, you know, make sure that you're, have a check for colour blindness. Although it didn't stop Ian Botham. Ian Botham is colour blind, and it didn't stop him smashing it all over the place. So if you play with sight screens, which most people do, I would have thought, but not everyone does. But if you play with sight screens, make sure you're using the sight screen. You know, if it's set for right arm over and it's a left arm round bowler, do make sure that the sight screen gets moved. It's there to help you see. So don't be afraid to ask to move the sight screen. So those are the basics, really. And then it's a matter of practice. After that, it's a matter of practice. Face a lot of bowling, as much bowling as you can in as many different conditions as you can. Go to nets as much as you can. Play as much cricket as you can. And you just get used to it. You get used to the idea of watching the ball from the hand. The more you do it, the better you get at that.
Yeah, so it really comes down to experience, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. This is one of those things that there's no substitute for experience. Some people are better at it naturally than others. Those people are usually the top batsmen.
Yeah.
Whatever level you're playing at, you find that the better batsmen are the ones that pick up the line and length of the ball earlier than the worst batsmen.
Yeah.
So I would say if it's a real problem, if you're facing a lot of bowling machines, stop facing bowling machines for a while. Because the bowling machines don't teach you how to pick up line and length from the bowler's hand. Because a lot of it is the point of release. You know, you get that thing where you can just see that the ball's come out a fraction later than it normally does. So you know the ball's going to be short. And if it comes out a fraction earlier than it normally does, you know the ball's going to be full, for example. Yep. So you don't see that with the bowling machine because it always comes out at the same point.
Yeah.
So stop facing bowling machines if you're facing bowling machines. A good drill you can do is get somebody with... you can do this with a tennis ball, or you can do it with a cricket ball. Get somebody to stand about 15 to 18 yards away from you. And they take a couple of steps to replicate the run-up, and then they throw the ball down. You can gradually make this faster and faster, but you can start relatively slowly. They throw the ball, and it's either short or full. And if it's full, you don't have a bat. You stand in your normal stance, but you don't have a bat. If it's full, you take a step forward as if you're going to play the shot, whatever it is, defensive or drive or whatever. You step to the ball, but you instead of playing a shot because you haven't got a bat, you catch the ball. And again, if it's short, you take a step back, take a big step back, and you catch the ball. And that gets you in the mindset of watching the ball, waiting till you pick up the line. When you pick up the line, moving to the ball and doing everything in the right order and just getting that. You pick up the line length, then move, rather than what a lot of people do is they try and preempt it. You know, I'm looking for the cover drive, so they step across the line a little bit, they plant their front foot a little bit, and, you know, they're in a bad position if the ball's going down the leg side. You're keeping still, pick up the line of length, and then move, take a positive step forward or a positive step back and play the shot. Except you're not playing the one thing you're leaving out in that drill is playing the shot. So you're doing everything up to the point of playing the shot, and then you just catch the ball. So that's quite a good that's quite a good practice because it teaches you to pick up line and length early, and you can do that just with if you've got a friend who's got a similar problem, you can just take it in turns. You can do like 10 balls, 12 balls each, and then swap, and then you know, just keep doing it for 10 minutes.
There's also a drill I've seen, David, where the batsmen get the bowler to have a multicolored ball, so with each half of the ball on a different color. And as the bowler runs up and is about to bowl, he thinks in his head about which color of the ball is inside and which is outside.
Yeah.
To really get to concentrate on the ball.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
And I've seen that help. I've seen that help a few batsmen as well.
Yeah, that is a really good one. Yeah, and you can do that with a if you're an opening batsman, or you bat in the top three or four or whatever, you can do that with a cricket ball as well, a normal cricket ball, by looking for which side is the shiny side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to confuse yourself by thinking, right, I can work out which way it's going to swing by looking at which side is the shiny side. You don't necessarily want to do that. You can do if you want, but that just adds a level of complexity, and you want to make it as simple as possible, in my mind. So you look for the think to yourself, right, look for the shiny side, and then you can, and then you're really focusing very, very intensely on the ball. Then which side is the shiny side as it's coming down? Or look for the seam. That's another thing that people say. Watch the seam as it comes out of the hand, because then you're highly focused on a very small part of the ball. So that's a really good practice. And if you are using a two-coloured ball, like, you know, like red and white halves or whatever, then another thing you can do is if you've got a bowler who's doing some target practice in the net, then give them a coloured ball, give them a half and half ball, or a few half and half balls. Mm. You go and stand in the back of the net, so you're not behind the net, so you're not, you know, you're not in any danger from the ball. You watch what you do, and as they're bowling the ball, you look and you think either in swinger or out swinger, depending which side. So you say, right, okay, so the red side is going to be the shiny side. Which side is it on? It's right, out swinger, in swinger, out swinger, or whatever. And you can get your practice that way as well. So you don't even need to be batting do that. You can just stand behind someone else who's batting and do it. So yeah, there's lots of ways to do that, but the bottom line is there is no shortcut. If you're not very good at it, you just need to practice, because if there's one secret to good batting, if there probably isn't one secret, but if there was one secret, it would be pick up the line and length as early as you possibly can.
All right, let's have a recap of what we've looked at today. We spoke about wicket-keeping drills and training tips. And tips suggested were using a tennis ball and a tennis racket and getting someone to hit the ball to you to practice soft hands and technique. And also throwdowns, or getting someone to bowl at you with a cricket ball. Not in the nets, but maybe in a practice game. We also spoke about the lower abdomen problem that Yadav was having. And David suggested that Yadav see a physio first to make sure that it's nothing serious. But he also spoke about the role of the core in cricket and about stabilizing the lower back during movement. And he said that more practice is required by playing cricket in the right way. And that's more important than doing stuff like sit-ups that don't apply to cricket at all. We spoke about training tips for people with small backyards or who don't have people to train with. We did say that it was really hard because cricket is a team sport and requires a batsman and a bowler. But useful things to do were things like mirror batting, so practicing your technique in front of a mirror to see if anything is wrong, or using a tennis ball or a golf ball against the wall to practice hand-eye coordination. And we also looked at picking up the line and length of the ball early. And David said that it really comes with experience by facing a lot of balls. And it doesn't really help facing a lot of bowling machines, but it has to be done by facing a real bowler. And you could also get someone to throw the ball down at you without a bat, about 16 to 18 yards away, to replicate the bowling a runner and to see if it's full to put your front foot out, or if it's short to put your back foot back and catch it, to really get there into your mind. Please don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Yep. You can download our podcast from there, or you can join Twitter and subscribe to us there as well. If you guys have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, guys. From Australia, this is Kevin Sampath signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.